Well, with next week being Head and Neck Cancer Week, I thought it would be a good idea to spend some time talking about those kinds of cancers with you. Larry Mueller here, talking today about laryngeal cancer and other cancers of the head and neck with two guests, Dr. Seth Daly, who is with the Division of Otolaryngology, the Head and Neck Surgery, part of the School of Medicine and Public Health. One of our guests, the other, Rachel Kammer, who is from the Voice and Swallowing Clinic at the UW-Madison Clinical Sciences Center. She specializes in swallowing. So we're really pleased to have both of them with us today. And certainly, if you have some questions or comments as we move along, I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Rachel Kammer, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Seth Daly, thank you for coming back. Appreciate it very much.
Great to be back.
Lots of people afflicted with laryngeal cancer and some of these other cancers of the head and neck?
That's right. Laryngeal cancer is one of head and neck cancer, which is the sixth most common malignancy in the United States at present. There are about 12,000 new diagnoses per year wow. of laryngeal cancer, so it happens quite a bit, and it's certainly been publicized in some people who've had laryngeal cancer as well. So it's getting to have a pretty good awareness in the public now.
I want to talk with Rachel just a little about the Voice and Swallowing Clinic. What kinds of how do you work with people, and what kinds of people come to your clinic?
Well, my job as a swallow specialist and my role in the head and neck cancer multidisciplinary team is to work with patients on their speech and swallowing during and after they're being treated for head and neck cancer, so during and after radiation or surgery or both.
And we already have callers on online, but swallowing becomes difficult because of treatments that people have, or is...
So when there's surgery to the mouth or throat, there's alteration in the anatomy of the mouth and throat, and so this can interfere with the swallowing mechanism and therefore give people difficulty swallowing foods and liquids. Also, the process of radiation kills the cancer, but it can also affect normal tissue in the mouth and throat, and so it can also interrupt the swallow mechanism and, again, give people difficulty with their swallowing.
In terms of laryngeal cancer, Dr. Daly, is this a genetic kind of thing? What normally brings it on?
Yeah, that's a great question. The head and neck cancer, as a general rule, is a reasonably predictable entity. There are three major risk factors that we know of. One is smoking or tobacco use, including chew, particularly with oral cancer. Two is alcohol. And three is the presence of human papillomavirus. There are certain strains which may predispose people to types of head and neck cancer, particularly in what we call the oropharynx, the region of the base of tongue, the region of the tonsils, soft palate, that sort of thing. There are certainly genetic predispositions in certain cases, but the vast majority really is sort of a preventable disease. Two other points just about it. One is that there is a synergism between alcohol and tobacco. So it's sort of like 2 + 2 = 8, if you will. The other thing to mention is that there are, you know, Wisconsin is probably one of the best places to quit tobacco or smoking in the whole country, particularly Dane County.
And we have some wonderful doctors at the University of Wisconsin and the cancer the quit smoking clinic, who do a great job helping people.
That's right. Mike Fiore has done a really bang up job trying to increase awareness and increase resources for people to begin the process.
Is this something that if it's laryngeal cancer, for example, if it's caught early, can you have some positive outcomes from it?
Yeah, that's another really good point, especially given that Head and Neck Cancer Day is going to be proclaimed next Wednesday by Governor Jim Doyle at the University Hospital. And so screening is extremely important, and it's very available both through, you know, whenever you go to your dentist, I'm sure you notice that they're kind of looking around and feeling under your chin, and all that's for oral cancer screening. And so patients with early cancers do much better than patients with later cancers. So screening and awareness and, getting out here on the radio and that sort of thing is very valuable for as a public health service.
And Rachel, what's that Wednesday event all about, by the way?
So next Wednesday, April 29th, we will be running a free oral cancer screening at the UW Hospital. The time is 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's going to be at the ENT clinic, which is on the second floor or the main floor of the hospital near the atrium. So 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's free, and there are no appointments necessary. Just stop on by, and we'll do a free oral cancer screening on you.
And that's next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, April 29th.
Well, every one of our lines is filled, so I think it's probably a good idea to go to the phones here and see what's on people's minds. So let's go to Carol first in Elm Grove. Carol, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I hope I'm on topic, but I have chronic rhinitis and a dry cough. And so I went in, and I do have acid reflux and something called cobblestoning in the back of my throat. So I just wonder what the next step is. I don't think it's the cancer-leading condition, but how would you treat? I mean, does one have to take medication every day? I suppose I've not wanted to do that, but I mean, I can always feel the sliding in my throat with the rhinitis, and I cough a lot, a dry cough.
Sure, those are actually really common complaints and can often be difficult to tease out, and it at some point or another gets to the importance of having a good evaluation by a trained physician or a clinician to try to sort those things out. In answer to your question, there are some things that you can do to try to improve that without necessarily taking medication, making sure you don't eat before you go to bed, trying to avoid spicy foods, trying to avoid eating before you exercise, for example, to prevent food coming up into your esophagus and even up into your throat, which can produce some of the symptoms you have. Reflux, in fact, may have some sort of a role in, if not the promotion, at least the sort of rapid movement of head and neck cancer. And so we often take that into account, particularly with the larynx.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Carol. Appreciate your call. I want to give Clark in Milwaukee a chance to participate, too. Clark, hello to you.
Hi.
What's on your mind today?
Yeah, I was calling because you said that this woman specializes in swallowing. And I went to my doctor not that long ago, and he told me that I had esophagitis. He couldn't really determine exactly what caused it. He said it might have been acid reflux, or he said that I might have irritated my esophagus by swallowing something, which then caused me to swallow more air and then cause more acid reflux, irritating it. It went away, and not too long, he gave me some medicine for acid reflux, which I haven't had to take since then. I just took it for about a week, and there's no pain or anything. But since then, I still tend to swallow air, and I can't. I'm wondering if there's ways that I can monitor that or control it. It doesn't cause me any discomfort in the esophagus anymore, but definitely, like, when it comes to indigestion, I think it might contribute to that.
All right, that's not a cancer type related question, but let's see what Rachel has to say about it. Rachel,
you know, it's difficult to tell exactly what's going on if you're swallowing. You feel like you're swallowing more air than you should be. You know, the best thing I would say for you to do would be to pursue a swallowing evaluation. And so what we do for a swallowing evaluation is we can take you to X-ray, and we have you swallow barium, and we watch barium move through your mouth and throat and also your esophagus. So you could have, then we can evaluate that whole tract and get a better idea of what's going on. That's what I would recommend, talking with your primary care doctor and seeing if that would be something to pursue.
Are there clinics that are you know, let's see, Clark's from Milwaukee. Are there places, of course, we're here in Madison with a great center here, but what about other places? Milwaukee have and other places?
Sure,
have
sure. I work closely with a woman at Freidert, and so there's definitely very qualified professionals that you could see in Milwaukee.
Yeah, you certainly also don't necessarily have to go to a major center to get a swallowing study or to get what's called a modified barium swallow or an esophagram or something like that. So it's by no means a unique to to major urban centers. It's simply that at some of these centers we end up seeing entities that are a little bit more odd and perhaps more difficult to diagnose at times.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck, Clark. Thank you for calling. Bruce in Milwaukee, we're on to you now. Hi, Bruce.
Hi there. Thanks for the show. I've looked into mouth cancer on the web and other places, and I have sort of a two-part question. One is, what would you look for early symptoms of this? The second is, I have achalasia. I've been diagnosed with it for 10 years, and I thought it was a swallowing disorder at first, but I find out it's something different, and I've been treated with Botox. Is achalasia a cause of cancer?
Hmm. All right. Dr. Daly? Seth Daly?
Sure. Those are both very good questions. So symptoms related to oral cavity cancer are principally mouth pain, tongue pain, an ulcer that won't heal, blood from the oral cavity. And sometimes you get sort of dull, radiating pain maybe into the jaw, into your teeth, sort of an unusual sensation that you feel kind of won't go away. It can even radiate up into your ear. And you also have to be aware of lumps or bumps under your chin and in the neck. So that's kind of a general look at many of those things. You might have trouble moving your tongue. You might have trouble swallowing and sort of pronouncing words based upon that. As far as the second question related to achalasia, certainly Botox is a reasonable option for that. But your question was more about cancer, it seems, with that. So probably the most important thing to mention is that the single most common cancer that is increasing in incidence now in the United States and in other developed nations is adenocarcinoma of the esophagus. And so often this is seen at the distal end of the esophagus, kind of at the bottom at its junction with the stomach. And you probably have heard the term Barrett's esophagus or something like that, pre-malignancy. And so when people have achalasia or exposure to additional chemicals from the stomach, acid, bile salts, et cetera, there's some thinking that that may predispose people towards the beginnings of cancer and then even the development of actual cancer called adenocarcinoma of the esophagus. So that's something that we certainly think about a lot.
All right.
Oh, my God. What should I do about that to monitor that?
I'm not necessarily saying that's the case for you personally, but it is something that we think about a lot for people who have additional exposure of the esophagus to stomach contents. If you need to have your esophagus screened, then unfortunately, the great part about the oral cavity is that if you open your mouth, you can generally see in. The esophagus, we're not so lucky. So under those circumstances, either an otolaryngologist can look in the office using a scope that goes through the nose and down into the esophagus, or a gastroenterologist can look using a different scope going through the mouth down into the esophagus to look, take pictures, and possibly sample the tissue, so-called biopsies.
Okay. I looked for an ear, nose, and throat place here in Milwaukee, and I didn't really find a clinic that really specialized in that. It was under, like, other names. It was like you found people that were doing something else and under a different category. So why are ear, nose, and throat places not necessarily always labeled or categorized as such?
I'm certainly no, my wife and daughters will tell me that I'm no webmaster, so I'm not sure I can help you with some of those items there. But not all otolaryngologists specialize or are necessarily experts at the esophagus, even though it certainly is within our domain. So you kind of have to maybe look around a little bit. It does involve looking. That said, in Milwaukee, there are lots of people who would be able to help you for sure, both at Frederick Hospital and at other spots, either in private practice, in the office, or in a specialized clinic. So I don't think you'll have any problems finding some qualified professionals.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Dr. Seth Daly, physician in the Division of Otolaryngology, Head and Neck Surgery at the School of Medicine and Public Health, and Rachel Kammer, who is with the Voice and Swallowing Clinic at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Clinical Sciences Center, as we talk with them today about laryngeal cancer and other cancers of the head and neck. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or shoot us an email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking laryngeal cancer and other laryngeal. Is it laryngeal or laryngeal?
Either one is acceptable, so long as we're in the mix. I don't really care how you pronounce it.
Okay. Dr. Seth Daly and Rachel Kammer, our guests today, and happy to have them with us. And again, join us with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. There's a special event, Dr. Daly, that's coming up that I wish you'd talk a bit about.
Well, thanks. This is a first of its kind at the University Hospital and Clinics. It's an event called Explore the Voice, and it's designed to, you know, invite all individuals who use their voice for communication, professional singers, teachers, occupational voice users, you, for that matter, mm-hmm. Me, Rachel, everybody who uses their voice for professional means. And so we're going to be talking about how the voice works, just the fundamentals, the basics, prevention strategies, what voice therapy means, how it can help you, some medical therapy, surgical procedures for voice problems, and a lot of different ways to measure the voice. And we have a huge number of experts coming in this, both physicians and mostly speech pathologists who have excellent training in vocal pedagogy, and many of whom are professional singers themselves. So this is a great regional, local, and regional event to explore the voice, and we invite everyone to come. It's Saturday, May 16th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the University of Wisconsin Hospital. And if you need to check out a website, it's www.surgery.wisc.edu. And that's /explore_the_voice.
All right. Surgery at wisc.edu.
Surgery.wisc.
Oh, surgery.wisc.
.edu /explore_the_voice.
All right. There you have it. And it's May 16th. So,
and it's free.
You know, just as an aside here, before we go back to the phones, watching the NCAA basketball tournament and hearing these coaches after the fact, where they, I mean, they're hollering and screaming over the course of several days. That do a lot of damage to your voice,
you know,
because you can barely hear them by the time it's over.
Yeah, the vocal cords are sort of a magical little entity in that there's a lot of forgiveness there. You know, in the same way that people play football on Sundays and then get up the next morning and are able to walk and do their thing, the vocal cords are in many ways kind of like shock absorbers, and they are constructed with various proteins, glycoproteins, cells, and a structure that supports a lot of this trauma. The other thing that's associated with doing all that yelling and screaming, of course, is the muscles around the vocal cords, so the neck muscles, the throat, the shoulders, and so often people will kind of be physically exhausted just from voicing, even though we think of it as sort of just a having to do with the vocal cords. It's really a full body sport.
Mary in Green Bay has a question or comment, so let's go to Mary. Hi, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I think I'll probably be asking a question connected to the previous caller regarding achalasia. I have been having problems swallowing for several years. I am 72 years old, and a couple of years ago, I had the barium swallow, which I failed miserably. The pill just stayed. It didn't go down into the esophagus or follow it down into the stomach at all. The doctor then scheduled me for a motility test, which I passed. He said that was okay, and his main concern had been for this achalasia. And he said, I did not have that. I'm having increased problems swallowing now, and my main problem after listening to the previous caller's answer is a little bit more involved, but the reason I called was I take a lot of medications, and I'm wondering if this difficulty swallowing is
related to
disturbing,
that somehow.
No, mm-hmm. disturbing the absorption of my medication in some way or another. And what would you suggest I do?
We're seeing gastroenterologist for this problem?
Yes, that's who did the test a couple of years ago.
Okay, and so this was a couple of years ago,
right?
And you feel like it's worsened since then?
Yes, yes.
Okay, and there was no treatment that he did at that time after he did the evaluation?
No.
You know, I would probably go back and have it reevaluated. 2 years is a long time, and it certainly could have worsened, and you subjectively think that it's worsened. And so I think it's worth going back and maybe having a repeat barium swallow study to image your esophagus again and your throat, so that, you know, they can see if it worsened and if there's something that could be done about it now. Just some behavioral strategies, and some of these are common sense, and I'm sure you've tried some, but just taking smaller bites and drinking water and staying upright after you finish eating for at least a half hour to make sure things clear through your esophagus, and, you know, like I said, drinking water and making sure you drink at least a full glass of water. With the pill, concerning the pills not absorbing in the right place or absorbing in your esophagus instead of your stomach, that certainly is a concern, and you might want to ask your pharmacist if some pills might be able to be crushed and you can swallow them, mix them in with a spoonful of pudding and swallow a crushed pill that way. You need to ask the pharmacist first, though. Some pills can be crushed and some pills cannot, so I would double check that. But that's a strategy that often helps people that have difficulty with swallowing pills.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, and thank you very much for calling, Mary. Appreciate your call. Sherry and Nina, we're on to you now. Hi, Sherry.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question. I'm wondering, is there any connection with secondhand smoke to some of these cancers of the throat? Like either, you know, like I'm a child, I'll be 40 soon. I was a child who grew up with a smoker. And now when I take my children in for their checkups, they always say, does the child live with a smoker? And I'm thinking, are they finding some connections to this? Or I just was curious if you knew anything about that.
Mm. All right. Dr. Daly?
Sure. There's a... There's good evidence to support the acquisition of secondary cancers in those who do not smoke but who are around smoke, i.e. secondhand smoke, so-called upper air digestive tract cancers. There's less good evidence in head and neck because it's not as common as lung or esophageal, and so we simply don't have the numbers necessarily to be able to prove it as well. But lung and esophageal and throat cancer really all go together. They have the same causative factors, and they, in many ways, they behave the same. So one would have to suspect. There was actually an interesting article, I think it was in Wisconsin State Journal, about so-called third-hand smoke, that when there's smoke that's, for example, on people's clothing or in the rugs or the curtains or that sort of thing, and there are children around, it may also predispose towards chronic illnesses.
Ah, it's one I hadn't heard.
So the short answer is you certainly want to, you know, tobacco smoke or whatever kind of smoke is really detrimental to a growing child's health.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I'm having throat issues now, and I've been a singer all my life, and I'm thinking, gosh, I wonder if there's any connection. And we don't smoke in our house, but it sure makes you wonder. So,
thanks very much for calling, Sherry.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Mary and Butler, on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I don't talk very well. This has gone on for a number of years. Started out with having asthma problems, but it was bothering my throat more and more. And I have gone through several hospitals, several different kinds of tests, and they told me, well, I had a GERD problem, right? Well, I'm trying to take care of that, and it really doesn't bother me very much at all because I'm careful of how I eat and all that other stuff. But I constantly have this feeling in the back of my throat that there's a lump there. And if I can press with my fingers on the front of my throat there, it kind of hurts a little bit. I can feel it doesn't feel so good. And this affects my voice. I have a hard time talking. Sometimes I can't talk at all. Sometimes I can talk just fine. Sad part is my training is a speech pathologist, and I had done that work until last April when I retired. That's just about a year ago. I am now 82 years old, and I don't really want to believe that this is just strictly an age thing. This is more than that. And I take medications for the asthma, and I'm on Advair, and I take other medications for arthritis. but there's something very definitely wrong in my throat and in my going down into the swallowing. Once in a while, food goes down the wrong way. It goes down into the trachea. Instead of going to the trachea, it goes down into the breathing tubes. But it's just like I have so many doctors looked at that, and they're all telling me I got a problem, but nobody follows up on it, and nobody gets specific. And I don't know if I'm not asking the right questions or what it is, but too many times they say, well, you know, you're getting older. Wait a minute.
All right. Well, I tell you what, let's get some comments. We'll start with Dr. Daly.
Sure.
Do you want to?
Yeah. First of all, I'm sorry that you're experiencing all these symptoms. It sounds really frustrating. Another thing to mention is that problems having to do with voice and swallow are often what we call multifactorial. In other words, it's usually from more than one thing. You know, if you, taking a different example, if you fall and break your arm, you know, that's a pretty specific event with an obvious cause where, you know, you can kind of piece everything together. With the voice and throat, the symptoms that one might have, a feeling of lump in the throat, kind of a diffuse soreness, discomfort, often, you know, honestly, it takes time to sort that out, sometimes medication trials, and often multiple visits with both a speech pathologist and a physician, putting our heads together as a team to try to sort things out. From what you're saying, it certainly sounds like the most pressing issue is things going down the wrong pipe. Okay, so that would be called aspiration. And that's what we worry about for people over, you know, 60, 70, 80, where the swallowing mechanism is not as robust or safe as it used to be. So from listening to many of your concerns, although I think we can absolutely address many of your voice concerns, I think we can help you get better. Absolutely the most important thing at the top of the list here is the swallowing. So you should come in, maybe get an evaluation. If you can, go to a center where there's a team. They can talk things through. And again, try to understand the multifactorial nature of your problem. Rachel?
Have you had a swallow study yet in X-ray?
Yes, I have. And I have been to several different hospitals. And I've even been up to the hospital up in Wausau where they said that some of the findings that other people found, where they said there was some paralysis of some of the swallowing mechanism. They said they did not see that, and they put tubes down in my throat and lit lights and the whole thing, whatever. Yeah, and I have, one of the things that bothers me is that when things start to get kind of sticky with my throat there, I go into anaphylaxis, and then I really got a problem because my whole throat swells shut, and then they have to take me to the emergency room. Yeah, or I won't make it.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty serious. That sounds like a strong drug allergy or something like that. And sounds like you should definitely have that nailed down so it doesn't happen again. If it's life threatening, that's obviously super serious.
So she needs to get back to, where would she go? Just to her.
We always try to recommend that people have their care coordinated through their primary care physician. That is their touchstone, and that is the basis through which all their care should be guided. That said, if she wants to, if you live locally, we'd be happy to see you in the otolaryngology and voice and swallow clinic.
At the UW.
At the UW.
All right, Mary, good luck, and thank you very much for calling. I want to give Tony in Janesville a chance to get on with us. Tony, hello to you.
Hi, Larry. Love your show.
Thank you.
Say, I just called and find out. I had cancer in 2006, throat cancer at the base of the tongue. And I'm curious about the screening process. Is this the kind of cancer that'll present itself somewhere else in the body, or will it be pretty much restricted to the upper part of the body?
Sure, that's a really good question, and we can both kind of talk about how that's evaluated. If you have a throat cancer that presents in the base of the tongue or the tonsil or the soft palate, that's, again, the region called the oropharynx. It's not as visible as the oral cavity. Again, the oral cavity is easier to screen simply because it's more visually available to those who, you know, who can look at it. So oropharyngeal cancer actually is more difficult to diagnose because you might not have as obvious a symptom. It's not as easy to see. And again, as we were mentioning before, there's a lot going on in the throat. People can have odd sensations, lump, ear pain, throat pain, change in the way that they swallow. Okay, and many of those things can be attributable to other sources. So that's one reason why it's not as easy to pick up an early oropharyngeal cancer, and why having good awareness and you know, particularly if one is or was a smoker or a heavy alcohol user. There are also some ways to evaluate it visually and with some of the special tests that we have. Rachel might want to talk about some of the barium swallows and things like that, which can help to delineate it a little bit.
Sure. The barium swallows that we do look at swallowing, but sometimes we can pick up abnormalities that may indicate cancer in the throat. But just getting back to your question on the oral cancer screening, this screening really would not be meant for someone like yourself who has already been diagnosed with a head and neck cancer. And I imagine since it was only in 2006 that you're still being followed for that. So I would pursue follow-up and continued watch under the doctor who treated you for your cancer. This free oral cancer screening, really we're hoping to gather people that have do not have a history of head and neck cancer so far and may have some early symptoms. That's who we are aiming for at the screening.
Okay. All right, thank you.
I just wanted to say that the treatment, the follow-up I've gotten has been great. The people have been great, all that are involved in it. So,
excellent.
Thank you.
That's great.
Good to hear.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Tony. Heidi in Dubuque, Iowa. On to you now. Hi, Heidi.
Hi. My question is relates to nicotine gum. I had stopped smoking about 3-4 years ago, but since then I've been finding that I am basically addicted to the nicotine gum, and I'm still chewing it for quite a few years here. And I was wondering if there's the same risk factor in chewing that as it would be the same as with people that chew tobacco.
That is an excellent question, because it's certainly a product which is out there and which is used a lot. I would say two things. One is that if you're not smoking, good work. If you need to and or want to chew nicotine gum for the rest of your life, provided that it helps you not to smoke, go ahead and do so. The health risks, as far as we know at this point, are substantially worse with tobacco than with nicotine gum. That said, early on, there was, we didn't know necessarily all the health risks associated with cigarettes. And so, there used to be advertisements of, for example, of physicians who smoked, saying, go ahead and enjoy. So can I tell you with any sort of confidence that the nicotine gum doesn't contain, carcinogens or things like that where, 10 years, 20 years down the line, we're going to find out that there was some sort of health risk? No, I can't tell you that confidently. What I can tell you is that we know very securely the health risks associated with tobacco, and that probably it's something I wouldn't worry about the cancer risk with the nicotine gum so much.
Okay, great. All right.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 and give us a call with your questions and comments. And let's go back to that. A couple of things that I wanted to go back to and touch on. One is the special event, Exploring the Voice. Can we go back and just kind of repeat what's going on with that, Dr. Daly?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So this is the first of its kind event at the University Hospital. It's on May 16th. It's a Saturday, so hopefully there'll be a lot of people who might be available. It's from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. We're exploring the voice fundamentals, it's designed for those who use their voice for communication, professional singers, teachers, occupational voice users, but really anyone who has an interest in the voice at all. And so we invite everyone, if you're a voice teacher, if you're a lawyer, if you're a teacher, if you're any type of voice professional, or if you simply have an interest. It's free, and there are people with varied interests and areas of expertise to talk to you. And it's really almost a full day event and looks to be great fun.
And then I want to go back to the oral screening as well, because people in the Madison area, at least, anybody, I guess, even if you're not in the Madison area, you could come to a screening that's free. And talk about that, would you, please, Rachel?
Yes. Next Wednesday, April 29th, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., we're having a free oral cancer screening. at the otolaryngology or ENT clinic at the main hospital at UW Hospital. That clinic is on the second floor in the atrium. So 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. The screening takes about 10 minutes, so it's fairly quick. Also on that day, Governor Doyle will be proclaiming Head and Neck Cancer Awareness Week.
And the mayor of Madison will be there, too, if I'm not mistaken.
The mayor of Madison is going to undergo the oral cancer screening himself.
And one of the nice things is that you don't have to worry about parking out there either, because if I'm not mistaken, the parking is free. Free parking in the hospital ramp is what I understand. So maybe.
I'm not sure about that. I hope that it is, but I'm not sure.
All right. Well, we'll at least there's parking out there, and you'll be able to get parking. If it's not free, it'll be it's reasonable. That's for sure. Well, I tell you what, it's been great being able to talk with you today about cancer of the head and neck and laryngeal cancers. We didn't get as far as I would have liked, but you know that's kind of how things.
Well, there's always room to come back.
There's always room to come back, and thank you both so much for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Our guests today, Dr. Seth Daly, who is with the Division of Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery at the School of Medicine and Public Health, and Rachel Kammer, who specializes in swallowing, with the Voice and Swallowing Clinic at the UW-Madison Clinical Sciences Center. So we're really pleased to have both here. And we will have them back, and we'll talk with them again. I'm sorry we didn't get to all the calls. The lines are always filled. But that's the way it goes, and we'll have them back. I can promise you that. Coming up, though, we're going to be talking with you a little bit about nursing homes. We'll talk about employment, and we'll talk about long-term care. We have a couple of guests coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.